this last Sunday morning. I'd like to read the first four verses. 2 Kings 5, verses 1 through 4. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, "Would God my lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, which would be Elisha, for he, Elisha, would recover him of his leprosy." And one went in and told his lord, saying, "Thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel." Again, this is just a portion of the account of the healing of Naaman. In verse 1, we're given some information concerning the person of Naaman. There's five things that we're told of there of his person. And then we're told of his condition, and that is he was a leper, which of course meant more than any of the other things that were said concerning him. And then in verse 2, we're told of a little maid in Naaman's household. She's there by the providence of God. The word little maid, or the words, it's not stressing her stature. She may have been, I'm sure she was, of little stature, but really what it's referring to is her age. She was a girl. She wasn't a woman. She was a girl. She was a little maid. And in this message, we want to take notice of this little maid. Many do not pay much attention to her. Very few people preach. I've only heard a couple of messages concerning her. She has an enormous and a very significant role in this account of Naaman. And she serves as an example, an encouragement to us as God's people today. We're not told much about her, but we do need to take to heart the lessons that are found in this little maid. So I want to speak tonight on replicas of a little maid. In other words, we need to be like her. We need to be like her. She's really pretty remarkable. When you consider her circumstances and you consider her spirit, she's a very remarkable individual. First of all, consider the history behind this little maid. It's recorded briefly and somewhat vaguely in verse 2. We see the Syrians had gone out by companies and brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid. So she's a Jewish girl, and she waited on Naaman's wife. So one day there was a raid of Syrian soldiers. They crossed the border going into Israel, and this girl is taken from her home. She was taken by a very cruel and evil action. The details are not given. We're not told how they took her, simply that she was taken. So there are no details. I mean, you could guess many things. Perhaps she was out picking berries or flowers, and soldier jumps from the bushes and grabs her and takes her away. We don't know. We don't know. Were her parents killed before her eyes? Could have been. We don't know. Was her house torched? Again, could have been, but we don't know. All we know is that she was taken. The precise details are not given. So this little maid, really what she is the spoils of a victorious enemy. That's what she's become. Also in verse 2, it says that she waited on Naaman's wife. So she was taken captive away from her home by soldiers. And no doubt there was something in her appearance that commended her to General Naaman, and he selected her as a part of his household. Perhaps she went to the slave market and Naaman bought her. We don't know. But she is a maid in Naaman's household. In other words, she's a servant to Naaman's wife. So she has been torn from her family. She has been torn from her home. And she is reduced to the life of a servant. So everything for her is now different. Everything. She's in a different country. She's in a different house, different culture. Everything is different. She's in a place. She's in a set of circumstances that were unexpected. It's not something that she ever thought about. It's not something that she planned for. Certainly, it's not something that she would have ever chosen. So she's in a place, she's in a circumstance that's unexpected, and that, again, would not have been her choice. And now she would have to endure a life of service in the house of an enemy. She's basically trapped. She's trapped in a life. She's trapped in a work that she cannot leave. So these are not by any means favorable circumstances. Someone might argue, well, Naaman probably had more money than her parents. Believe me, that would have no bearing upon her. So this, of course, is a tremendous trial for this girl. It's an affliction in her life. But in all of this, we need to recognize the providence of God. The providence of God. It's something that is greatly misunderstood. We've preached several messages along the lines of the providence of God. First of all, what do we mean by the providence of God? Simply put, it is God working His plan, God working His purpose. That is the providence of God. It's what we read of in Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 11. The purpose of Him who worketh all things after the counsel of His own will. That's the providence of God. It's God working His purpose after the counsel of His own will. Providence of God is addressed in numerous times in the Bible. It's not called the providence of God. We see those words, and it came to pass. That's the providence of God. We see in Proverbs 16, verse 33, the lot is cast into the lap. In other words, plans are made, but the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. That's the providence of God, God working His plan. So the providence of God speaks of the fact that God is sovereign. It speaks of the fact that God has a purpose. It speaks of the fact that God has a plan. And God, in His sovereignty, works His purpose and works His plan. That's very comforting. Providence of God is a very comforting truth. So, this little maid is now in the house of Naaman by the providence of God. In other words, it was no accident. It was no misfortune that this little maid was now in the house of Naaman. We read in Proverbs 19 and verse 21, "There are many devices in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand." The counsel of the Lord. He could have said, "The counsel of the Lord shall stand." But when he said, "The counsel of the Lord, that shall stand," that puts more emphasis upon the truth. So things, as we all know, do not just happen. There is the providence of God. In our text, as we see many times in the Bible, God would use evil to bring about good. We see it all the time. It's all through the Word of God. And we see it in daily life. God can use evil because of who He is. And God does not do evil, but God can use evil to bring about good. That's part of the amazingness of God, that He can turn evil into good. So remember what Joseph said to his brothers there in Genesis 50 and verse 20. "But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass. Ye thought evil against me." What Joseph's brothers did to him was evil. It was wrong. But God used it for good. It was part of the providence of God. So God can make the sinful acts of man to praise Him. That's wonderful. Only God can do that. Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9, God said, "My thoughts are not your thoughts." Now this is where people run into a problem with the providence of God when they're trying to figure out why God allows something or why God did something. Well, one thing you need to know up front is your thoughts are not His thoughts. So you're not going to figure it out. "Neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." People all the time want to know, why did God do that? Why did God allow that? I don't know. I don't have to figure it out either. But this little maid in the house of Naaman, there's no question. She's in a very dark set of circumstances for her. But God, in His all-wise providence, had placed that little maid in the house of Naaman. Well, God knows everything. God knew that Naaman would become a leper. God knew that He would send Naaman to Elisha to be recovered of his leprosy. And God, by His incomprehensible providence, places this little maid, and this is the only time in Scripture we read of her. What happened to her after this? Nobody knows. It's the only time we read of her. But God in His providence placed this little maid in this house to be a witness, to be a testimony before Naaman and his family and the other servants and to use her to inform them of a man by the name of Elisha who could bring about a cure. That's the providence of God in this little maid's life. The lesson for you and I is God places us. It's no accident where we are. It's no accident the street we live on. None of that's an accident. God places us in the midst of spiritual lepers. It's no accident the paths of that you cross with people in a day. God places us in the midst of spiritual lepers for the same reason that He placed this little maid in the house of Naaman, to be a witness, to be a witness, to be a testimony before them. We can't all go everywhere. So what does God do? He places us in different places to be a witness, to be a testimony. You can't be a witness and a testimony to everyone in the family of somewhere else, but God places people in your life, places you in their lives to be a testimony. We must be careful not to forget that God is always working His purpose, always working His plan. You got to be careful not to misrepresent God's providence. People do that all the time. They will say, well, God opened this door, this door, this door, therefore I can commit this, they're going to commit a sin, so God led me to do that. That's misinterpretation of the providence of God. It's also a misinterpretation of the person of God. God doesn't do that. So we have to be careful not to misinterpret God's providence. God determined to place this little maid in the house of Naaman. The reason, God had already determined to bless Naaman. He knew he was going to have leprosy. He knew he was going to heal him. God could have done it without the little maid. God could have done it without Elisha. But He chose these individuals, and He has them in their place. So be careful that when you do not understand God's providence, and often we don't. In fact, I would say more often than not, we don't understand the providence of God. Don't become discouraged because you don't understand the providence of God. Don't become bitter. But remember, just this wonderful truth, God is working His plan. God is working His purpose. In Romans 8:28, all things work together for good to them that love God, to them that are the called, according to His purpose. So the first truth we want to establish is this little maid is in the house of Naaman by the providence of God. Secondly, we want to see her behavior and the spirit of this little maid. We can learn a lot from her. So here's a girl. She's snatched away from her home. No doubt from what she says in verse 3, it was a home in which she had been raised and nurtured under the influence of God. She knew about the prophet. She knew about God. So it was a home in which she was nurtured under the influence of God and His Word. Why would God remove a girl from such a home? Could He not have used someone else? Well, of course He could have. But again, the providence of God is mysterious. Why did He pick this little maid? I don't know. Do you? None of us know. But again, there she is. And really, if you look at her, she appears doomed to a life of slavery, away from family and home. Again, her family may have been killed. We don't know. Home may have been burned. But she appears doomed to a life of slavery. So again, she's in a trial. And in this trial, and here's where she becomes a lesson to us. In this trial, she maintained faith in God. Now, we don't even know how long she was in the house of Naaman before Naaman became a leper. We don't know. But from what she said in verse 3, would God. So she believes in God. She has a faith in God. Would God, my Lord, that's referring to Naaman, my master, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy. So she had faith in God. Also from verse 3, we see that she was mindful of God. So in this trial, and it's a severe trial, it's a life-changing trial, she had faith in God. And she maintained faith in God, and she was mindful of God. She did not blame God. We, most of the time, do not understand the providence of God. And the providence of God can appear to be very cruel. But you better remember who it is that's working his plan. It's God. Don't blame God. Don't blame God. Trust God. Trust Him. She did not allow her circumstances to cause her to lose sight of God. How many times when we find ourselves in adverse circumstances that we begin to lose sight of God? You want to increase your affliction? Lose sight of God. You want to widen your trial and make your trial greater? Lose sight of the Lord. You'll do it. It'll make it worse. But she didn't seem to lose sight of God. From what she said in verse 3, manifests that she was mindful of the truth that she knew. She knew of God. She knew of a prophet. And she knew that this prophet could work miracles. So she maintained her belief in the truth that she knew. As a girl, there were many truths she didn't know, but she did know some. And the truths that she knew, she remained mindful of them. We must do that. We must do that in trials. It's a good thing in a trial just to reiterate truths in your mind. Just reiterate them in your mind. Be mindful of the truths that you know. Perhaps, now, Syria, the main god of Syria would have been Rimmon. Perhaps, we don't know, but I suppose it's very possible that there were times when Naaman's wife would have taken this girl to the house of Rimmon, where she would see the idols and the false worship. And she would begin to think along the lines of the psalmist in Psalm 115, verses 3 through 8. They have eyes, but they see not. They have noses, but they smell not, and ears, and they hear not. So perhaps she was brought under the influence of the false gods of Syria. I would say that would be very likely. But the truth is, she maintained faith in God. Also, in this trial, she remained faithful. Faithfulness is not the same thing as faith. It's connected, but it's not the same thing as faith. It's really more than faith. It is an extension of faith. It is the life that results from faith. Because she was mindful and focused upon God, and upon the truth that she knew, she was able to rise above her feelings. You say, well, how do you know that? Well, just simply from what she said in verse 3, we know that. Now, again, you put yourself in her place, and you can see that she rose above her feelings, her natural feelings. She's in a terrible circumstance. She's in a place and circumstance that she would have never chosen. I'm sure there were many nights that she sobbed in her bed. I'm sure. But she was never, I don't believe, she was ever given over the sulkiness or self-pity or anger or hatred or bitterness or resentment. Here she is, she's been torn from her family, the only thing she knows, torn from her native land, really by the rude hands of Syrian soldiers. Yet we do not find her cherishing or feeding a spirit of vindictiveness, because if she was vindictive, she would not have said what she said in verse 3. We do not see her cherishing or feeding a spirit of revenge. If there were feelings of retaliation that would sway over her, she would have watched with malicious pleasure the progress of Naaman's leprosy. She would have enjoyed it. She would have enjoyed watching that disease just sap his strength. Again, it was a slow but progressive disease. But the grace of God was upon her. She's not where she would have chosen to be. She's not where she wants to be. But the grace of God is upon her. And she no doubt drew from God's strength. And she did not render evil for evil. She was in a situation that put her under biblical obligation to love her neighbor as herself and to love her enemies. She's now in that situation. If God puts you amidst your enemies, you are now under the obligation to practice love your enemies. So that's where she is. She's in this place where she is now obligated, and she's now able to put into practice what Jesus said in Matthew 5. Notice Matthew 5, verse 44. Very familiar verse. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. That's not our nature. That is not our nature. But now she has, and it's easy to say those things. It's easy to tell someone, love your enemy, bless them that curse you. Well, that's easy to say to someone. That's easy, very easy. Try practicing it. It's not so easy. You have to have the special grace of God to practice that. But is that not what she's practicing here in 2 Kings 5, verse 3? Naaman is an enemy. And yet, she is burdened by the fact that he has leprosy. I've seen God's people rejoice over the death of an enemy. That's wrong. That's wrong. There's nothing right about that. It is a wrong spirit. Or to rejoice over the sickness of an enemy. Well, they deserve it. Well, what do you deserve? It's also a chance to practice Romans 12:17, recompense to no man evil for evil. So she did not think to herself, as she looks at Naaman and sees his appearance is changing, he's got leprosy, and she doesn't think to herself, I know where there's hope for Naaman. But you know what? It'll be the day I tell him about it after what he's done to me. She didn't think that way. That's amazing. That's truly amazing. But rather, she had pity upon him. She had sorrow in her heart as she watched Naaman suffer from this deadly disease of leprosy. How did she do that? Because her focus was upon God. And because her focus was upon God, she could have a burden for Naaman. She have a burden in her heart for Naaman. And she manifested a very generous and a very loving spirit toward the enemy of her country and toward the enemy that had done something very cruel to her, to take her away from her home. But yet, she manifested this generous and loving spirit. So could God had prevented her from being taken by Syrian soldiers? Of course he could have. Why didn't he? I don't know. Was this a terrible thing that happened to her? Well, of course it was. It's not something enjoyable. Did she understand why? We see that she has faith in God, but did she understand why God would allow her to go through this? Of course not. She didn't understand that. Would she had rather been home with her family? I'm pretty sure she would have. She had rather been just about any place other than where she was. You put most people in those circumstances, and what are they going to do? They're going to be depressed. They're going to sulk. Not her. If she would have hated Naaman and been bitter toward him, would there have been people who would have thought that, you know what, she has the right to do that? Well, yeah, most people would have thought that. But she maintained faith in God. She's amazing. She maintained faith in God. She remained faithful in her circumstances. We may find ourselves in terrible circumstances. We may find ourselves in circumstances that we would have never chosen. And by if there ever a chance to get out of them, we're going to. But the circumstances aren't really the issue. The issue is that we remain faithful in our circumstances, whatever they might be. That's what God's called us to do. So in spite of her circumstances, she did what God would have her to do. Circumstances do not dictate behavior. Anytime you go down that road, you're headed for disaster. Circumstances do not dictate behavior. God dictates behavior. Behavior. Faith in God dictates behavior. So let's look at the, man, time's flying. Let's look at the witness of this maid. So she's a captive. She's an exile among the enemies of her God and among her nation. No doubt she often yearns for home. She often yearns for Israel. But she is determined. I do not like these circumstances, but I am going to glorify the Lord in these circumstances. That needs to be us. And I am going to be a witness of His grace and His truth. I don't want these circumstances. I want out of these circumstances. But why, if I've got to be in the circumstances, I'm going to glorify God and I'm going to witness for Him. That seems to be her attitude. So regardless of circumstances, we are to glorify God. Is there a time that we're not to glorify God? We're to glorify Him in all things. Is there a time we're not to bear witness of him, whether it be by our life or whether it be by our word? We're always to be bearing witness of him. So when she sees the suffering of Naaman, she can't keep secret the fact that there's hope. She can't keep secret, I know a place, I know a man that can heal you. She can't keep it a secret. She can't keep it in. It's just like Jeremiah there in Jeremiah 20, verse 9. Remember, he determined that he was not going to preach any longer because no one was listening. But he couldn't refrain himself. Couldn't help himself. And that's how it is with this maid. So she says, "Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy." So what's she doing? She's acting as a signpost pointing to Naaman's only hope. That's why she's there. She's basically a sign. Again, God determined to bless Naaman, and he put a witness in Naaman's life. We are to be that God-placed witness wherever God places us. Wherever you find yourself, whether you like where you are or not, that's not the issue. Whether you wish you were somewhere else, that's not the issue. The issue is, what does God want me to do in this circumstance, among whomever we're placed? We are a God-placed witness. So this reminds us of our position in the world and in our circumstances, whatever our circumstances might be. We've been placed here to be a witness for God. That's always so. People talk, well, you know, my family's wicked. I'm sure they are. And we may not enjoy being around them, and a lot of times we have to separate from them. We understand all of that. But when we are with them, we're to glorify God. Do we like being with them? Not necessarily. But you'd better be careful about hating them. It's not what God would have you to do. You'd be a witness. This goes along with prejudice. Race. Well, I don't like that race of people. Well, what if you're among them? What if you're among them? You're to glorify God. You're to be a witness to them. Well, I don't care if they go to hell or not. Well, then you've got a problem. You've got a serious heart problem. Doesn't matter what they've done to you either. The Lord said in Isaiah 43 and 12, "You are my witnesses that I am God." You are my witnesses that I am God. That's what we're to testify. He's God. John 15, 27, "And ye shall bear witness because ye have been with me from the beginning." We are witnesses of the Lord. We are witnesses for the Lord. A witness is someone who testifies for another. We're to testify for God. We're with somebody and they curse. We're to testify for God. You don't have to be rude, but we have a responsibility to testify for God. Well, they're going to get mad. That's not the issue. We're to testify for God. What do we testify? We testify what we know. Well, I just don't know much. You testify what you do know. Don't testify what you don't know. You testify what you do know. You testify what you've seen. You testify what you heard. You testify what you've experienced. Bearing witness of God. A witness is someone who gives evidence. I believe this little maid gave evidence in her behavior and in her spirit of God. Because I don't believe the family would have listened to her had she just spent the whole day sulking. But there was something in her life. And when she spoke, They thought, there may be something to this. Because she testified with her life. Before you testify with your lips, please testify with your life. If your life is just as wicked as a sinner, then keep it shut. Keep your mouth shut when it comes to testifying for God, because you're going to do more damage than good. Because now people say, oh, yeah, that's what all Christians are like. So again, we first must make sure we testify with our life. And I believe it's easier to testify with our mouth than it is our life. It takes more effort to testify with our life. So her life demonstrated and revealed what she said. If we talk to someone about God or the Lord Jesus Christ, our life ought to bear witness of what we're saying. They don't have to agree with it. And they can get angry. But they should not be able to point to our life and say, well, you say that, but this is how you live. So a witness of God, as a witness of God, we should view our circumstances as opportunities to bear witness and testimony. Do I want to be in the hospital tomorrow as a patient? No, I don't. No, I don't. Am I going to be happy tomorrow if I wake up in a hospital bed? I guarantee you I won't be. But if I'm there, did not God put me there? Did not God, by His providence, put me there? And the nurses and the doctors and someone may be in the next bed. Did not God put them there? What did God put me there for? To glorify God, to bear witness. Or He may have put me there for them to bear witness to me. I don't know. But there is a purpose, is what I'm saying. Paul's attitude in Philippians 1:12, the things which happened unto me have fallen out or have resulted in the furtherance of the gospel. So he was aware. Me being in prison was not an accident. It was not just some misfortune. But it was for the opportunity to further the gospel. So we must view our circumstances, the people that we're with. We may not like our circumstances. We may not enjoy the people we're with. There's a lot of people I don't particularly enjoy being with. I don't enjoy being with someone that curses or drinks or any of that. I don't enjoy being with them. I'm not going to choose their company. I'm not going to seek it out. But if I find myself in their company, I do have a responsibility as a child of God toward them. Then consider, lastly, and we'll hurry, the apparent insignificance of this little maid. Her name is never given. Just a little maid. Just a little maid. And oh, what a contrast between her and Naaman. Naaman has everything. Someone might ask, well, what possible influence can that little girl have upon a man like Naaman? Isn't God wonderful? Never, ever forget, God uses feeble people. God uses unlikely people at times to bring great effect. It is often not the powerful sermon, but the little maid that God uses. People can hear a sermon. Many times there's no reaction whatsoever. God can send a little girl and make an impression upon someone. You never know what God will do. But our desire ought to be that little maid. I want to be her. The one that God uses. We can think little of ourselves, and we should, but don't underestimate God. You think as little as you want of yourself, but you have a great God. And He can use, in a mighty way, little things, insignificant things. If ever one seemed to be excluded by her position from doing something influential, it's this little maid in the house of Naaman. But God would use her. When she spoke what she did in verse 3, how do you think she spoke it? I believe she spoke it humbly. She's just a girl talking to adults. It's not like nowadays. And she spoke humbly. All that he were with the prophet Elisha. It was that humble voice that had an effect upon Naaman. As a child of God, don't ever, however few talents you might have, however few gifts you might have, don't ever think your life is without influence. There is no such thing as a life that does not have influence. You may have many limitations in your life, physically, mentally, spiritually. You may have many limitations, but God knows what He's doing. And when God places you in the midst of people, He knows what He's doing. Well, why didn't He place so-and-so? They're so much better equipped. God knows what He's doing. God knows what He's doing. It's not a question of, yeah, so-and-so is more eloquent than I am, and so-and-so can do this, and so-and-so can do that. That's not the issue. The issue is God placed you there. And God knows what He's doing. Always does. So God places us amongst spiritual lepers. Don't worry about the gifts you do not have. Take the ones you do have and give it to the Lord. And you'll be amazed what God can do. A person can have 20 gifts, 20 talents, and never hand them over to the Lord. And a person have one measly talent that they give to the Lord. And I guarantee you that one's going to be used more than the one with all the gifts and all the talents. So without a doubt, the gentleness, the unselfish, self-denying, and kind spirit and conduct of this little maid gave influence to her words. She was a testimony with her life, with her words. That ought to be our desire. I thank God for God's people who want to be a testimony to others. First by their life, then by their words. Don't ever lose sight of the issue. The issue is not, well, if I say that, they won't like me. That's not the issue. The issue is not whether they like you or not. That's not the issue. That's not what you're to be concerned about. Well, if I say that, they'll never ask me back, and then I'll never have up. You ever notice people say, well, yeah, I've known that person 15 years. Have you ever told them about the Lord? No, because I'm afraid if I do, then they won't let me back in their life, and then I'd never get to. Well, you haven't yet in 15 years. That doesn't make any sense. That's just an excuse. Just come out and say it. No, I haven't told them about the Lord because I'm scared to and because I really don't want to. I mean, just be honest. So don't get sidetracked with what's not even the issue. Well, if I talk to my aunt or my uncle or my cousin, they're not going to invite me to the next family reunion. Who cares? Who cares? That's not the issue. The issue is not the family reunion. God's placed you there to be a witness. And that's true wherever we go. We fail miserably, or I do. People cross our path every day. Am I to tell everybody that crosses my path about the Lord? No, I don't think so. It's not even possible. But something's wrong if on a very consistent basis you're with somebody for a length of time and they never know that you go to church and they never know about God. Something's wrong with that. I mean, you have multiple conversations with people. I promise you, there are opportunities. If you have not talked to them, you have missed opportunities. Opportunities have arisen. And people will say, well, I'm just waiting for the opportunity. If you've talked to somebody every day for a week, the opportunity has arisen. Whether you saw it or not, that's a different issue. But the opportunity has arisen. When we talk to people, we need to speak of the Lord. We don't have to hammer them. We don't have to preach to them. We just have to mention His name. Mention His name. People all the time say things. They just open the door and say, come on in. Tell me about the Lord. I mean, it's right there. It's plain as day. We need to notice those times. God, forgive me for all the times since I've been saved that I've passed up many opportunities, whether it be at work or wherever, because maybe I just didn't feel like it that day or whatever. God, have mercy upon us, but that we would strive to be a God-placed witness. If you find yourself in a circumstance that you don't want to be in, ask God, Lord, I know You put me here for a reason. Show me. And I guarantee you one of the reasons is to bear witness to somebody of God. Brother Tim, if you'd come.